every scenario. If I just did this, the inning would have been different. If I would have did this, that inning would have been different for sure. Because it's small parts throughout the game that change the course of the game that nobody even understands.
Welcome back to the Compound Podcast. This is episode 25, milestone episode. We're a quarter of the way to 100, guys.
Are we going to 100?
I just made up a milestone right there.
I was going to say, I was like, I don't know if 25 is really a milestone.
I made it up.
I think it is.
Also, this episode is presented by Parse Rum. I forgot to say that at the beginning. Presented by Parse Rum. I'm very excited for our guest this week. It is hitting coach Anthony Iaposi, and he will be our second guest that gets a bottle of Parse.
I shared some Parse last night with a friend of mine. He was very eager to try it. He wanted to try it before he ordered some. He had a lot of it, and he will be ordering some 12-year.
Look at you selling Parse.
That's me. You know?
Love to see that, Zachary. That's your life in a nutshell. You're pedaling out Parse out of the trunk of your car.
You know it. Racking up the miles.
Last week, we said we would give away 3 Is That So t-shirts, correct?
I believe we did.
Dakota, I'm going to need you to tell me who gets the t-shirts.
I'm going to be honest. I only found one on all of Twitter worthy of a t-shirt because the rest, I'll say it, they stunk. There wasn't that many and they stunk.
It sucked because the one we did last week was so much better.
Well, who says no is so much easier to use? Like, yeah. Is That So is kind of hard to use without like I saw some that were just like too big of chops on like the Brewers or like other teams or like other people. Like, it was just like kind of too mean. And I was just like, I can't let that.
You know, yeah, I'm not going to repeat that one.
Yeah. But really the only one I saw was from Mackenzie Anderson at Mac_Anderson2. She said, at Ian Happ liked my tweet with my review for the Who Says No contest. And then she still didn't win. Is that so?
Yeah, that's kind of messed up on your
basically,
part.
If Ian Happ likes your tweet, you're like, oh, I'm golden. That's it. I got a shirt coming my way. Like, she was locking it in already. And you kind of, you know, you didn't give it to her, Ian. That's on you.
That is on me. But, you know, I like to see the fans out there following along, tweeting. And I like to send my appreciation via the like of a tweet.
I do, too. I saw, what was the one? Oh, I like the tweet. We got some tweets. This has nothing to do with Is That So. But we had someone tweeted us the other day, like, there's like a question on Twitter that said, like, would you slap your most recent at for $1 million? And I was somebody's most recent at. And I mean, I would hope you'd slap me for $1 million. I'd get pretty close to killing Zach for $1 million.
You could just wear the slap and ask for like 100K of that.
For $1 million, you can knock me out. I don't care. Like, just give me like 50K of it.
Dakota, I'd do it for free. I'd slap you for free.
That's just kind of rude. I wouldn't slap you for free, man. You're my friend, all right? And friends don't do that, okay? Heard of it?
We're going to find a couple of those Is That So on the Twitter.
No, you're not, Ian. I look.
I'm going to find a couple, and we're gonna give a couple more t-shirts.
We had our one guy, Charlie, yelling at Obvious Shirts for the shipping label, and he said, Is That So?
You know, I respect Obvious Shirts that they just were like, you know what, we'll refund the shirt.
Exactly. Hey, but hand up.
One thing I'll say about Obvious Shirts, heavy into the Twitter game. When there's a Cubs game going on, it's my timeline is Obvious Shirts all the way down, and I love it.
They're watching the game looking for their next shirt.
Exactly.
Shout out Obvious Shirts.
Shout out Obvious Shirts. I guess we should talk for a second about the Cubbies, the fact that Cubbies just lost a couple games in a row. You know what is a really good thing is that it is August 16th and the Cubbies have now lost their first series of the year.
Exactly. Zach, would you say that in any way you are worried for the Chicago Cubs right now?
Hey, Dakota, what do we do? What am I doing right now? What do we do?
We flush the series down the drain and we move on to the next one. Who you guys got tomorrow? The Cardinals?
We got 5 games in 3 days against the Cardinals.
You know what that sounds like to me? Chance to win 5 games in 3 days.
Who says no?
That is exactly right. You know, what we should talk about for a second before Post gets on here is we should talk about 7-inning doubleheaders and how awesome they are.
I remember you said something. We were in triple ball last year when you were like, we played a doubleheader and you're like, oh, playing 7 innings.
I'll tell you one thing. Rossi has been thrown into a tough season for like your first managerial season. Like, doubleheaders or sevens, that's a completely different management style. Extra innings, guy on second base is like, what do we do now? Like, do we bunt? Do we not bunt? Like, does he steal? Like,
and this wasn't like in the off season, you know, you had time to prepare for this and think about lineups. It was like a month ago. Hey, by the way, extra innings, there's a runner on second. Go get him.
Especially the lineup wise, getting everybody in. Like, I feel like no one really has just sat there for like six straight games and not even sniffed an at bat. Like, obviously not everyone plays consistently, but I feel like he's done a good job of trying to keep everyone ready for when they need you in a big spot.
And, you know, it makes things easier like that when you have someone like Souza, you know, who doesn't play much and comes in and have huge ABs, Kip.
I'll tell you one thing about the Souza at bat. I think it's the best thing in the world. I'll give you guys a little secret here. Not really a secret, but swinging at the first pitch a reliever throws is just like, it's the smartest thing in the world to me, because no reliever is going to come in and try to start down 1-0, because typically if you're coming into a big spot, you're like, okay, I want to get ahead. Like, I don't want to walk this guy. Or you come in with the guys on, like, you want to get ahead right away. And I mean, it might be off speed. Like, there's tendencies guys have, but swinging first pitch, I love that.
You're trying to get ahead 0-1.
It'll probably be the best pitch you see all of that.
Right. There, you know, you're going to nibble, obviously, but you're not going to go, you know, you're not going to be from line to line, but.
Exactly.
Can we talk just for a minute about 7-inning doubleheaders? We didn't even talk at all, but I tried to say, like, let's talk about 7-inning doubleheaders. We don't get one thing.
Sorry. We brought our talent into this and switched things up on you.
All right, we were just rolling.
Yeah,
conversation.
Our bad.
After we have posts on, we'll talk about 7-inning doubleheaders. I'm coming back to 7-inning doubleheaders. All right, we have hitting coach Anthony Iaposte joining shortly.
Pose, I have to say that you've probably been the biggest proponent of the Compound Podcast since it started.
I am, bro. I listen to it. I laugh my ass off. And by the way, Shorty, that's a real painting behind me in the apartment. It's not some cow with horns or whatever it was.
Post, you are a podcast guy through and through, though. You listen to multiple podcasts.
Every day when I'm working out or at the apartment while I'm working.
You would just send random quotes of our podcast to me just out of nowhere.
You're now getting a bottle of Parse Rum because you're a guest on the podcast presented by Parse Rum.
But Shorty already got his, right?
Yeah, I got it.
Unfortunately.
It was actually great content when he just continued to not get it for like 2 weeks.
I was like a little kid going outside to check every day on my front porch, and it was just nowhere to be found.
Post, can you talk a little bit about the dugout atmosphere?
Yeah, dugout atmosphere is good. You hear it from other teams. You hear it from people who are watching on TV. I think Tony Riz leads that. Probably the most thing I look forward to during the day is actually not working with major league hitters. It's listening to Tony Riz's walk-up song, Tony Two Chains.
Like, Tony Two Chains?
Yeah, I just can't wait. Everybody's, you know, tapping and clapping, and you got the little one like you do yours. Hey, but it's pretty good. Some other songs are picking up. I know Bodie had some guys clapping today. Wilson's got the clapping. So we got to be able to do stuff to pick each other up when there's no fans in the stands and actually have some fun.
I mean, when his song comes on, you guys are usually, even with fans, right? You guys do, or the fans do a little something at least, right?
Yes. You know what comment Jason made? Jason Hayward, I think yesterday, he said, what people don't realize is that we do this, not maybe to this extreme, but we do this in the dugout every year. It's just a little bit more pronounced now that there's not as much crowd noise, and we're taking it a step farther just to continually bring the energy, because you have to do it for all 9 innings. Like, if you have to be involved in the game or else there's zero energy in the entire stadium.
Yeah. If when I was roving in 2015 and you'd go to Wrigley Field, like all I looked forward for was sitting in the dugout, listening to David Ross and Bussy. And then they would just lead the way, and Travis Wood, and everybody would just go crazy. So that's still going on today. It's just more pronounced because everybody could hear it in the stands, but the dugout is still pronouncing some energy.
You gave Riz credit, but really you should be given a ton of credit for the dugout.
I don't know. Like, I'm right in the front. I can't really see what's behind me. So,
but you don't stop the whole game.
I'm just so focused on the hitters. It's hard to balance both.
How many bats do you get a day?
As many.
A minimum of 27.
Yeah, minimum 27. So the failure rate is just out of control. It's like 30. Added average. So it's not the at bats, because I understand, like, when I got into coaching, I knew I wasn't hitting anymore. So I never took offense that, like, if we didn't hit or didn't score runs, like, it was my fault. Like, I'm not playing, right? You prepare the players and you provide the atmosphere, and then they got to go do their thing. So what I don't like is getting yelled at by the players when they have bad at-bats. That I don't like.
It's always your fault. You're the guy who's supposed to fix everyone. You're supposed to make everybody good.
Yeah, you know, you hear the ones, nobody wants to help me from somebody, and you never help me from another person. So, and then you spend all night digging, finding the Kinnick tracks and the video, and you got stats, and you're ready to present this thing. And then somebody will go, you know what it was, folks? It's my big toe. It wasn't in the ground right. Or my pinky. Like, what? Do you know how much time I just spent on you last night, and it's your big toe? Yeah, don't worry about the other stuff. Okay, thanks.
Hap, what was it in spring training? I said, like, I was like, oh, Post has the best job in the world. And you looked at me like I had six heads. You were like, what? His job is miserable.
If you're a big league hitting coach, you're miserable every night because somebody always has a bad game.
I don't look at it that way. I think it's a challenging job. I don't think it's, you know, people talk about the hitting coach being the toughest job. It's challenging, you know, because there's so many things you have to cover, and that's why you need help in the cages, or, you know, definitely Nate, who does a tremendous job, and what he does, wouldn't be able to get anything done without him or Sledge or Peeps. So you definitely need
for the listeners. Nate is offensive video strategy
scout, copy
scouting. Sledge is our assistant hitting coach. Peepee's an assistant hitting coach. All right, continue.
Yeah, so, you know, we're able to a couple of different angles, and the thing that I like about the group is that certain players don't have to necessarily go with certain coaches like some other places. Like, you guys are so self-efficient. It's like, we know each other's routines. If I'm not able to get in there with you, somebody will pick that up, and it's not going to be that big of a deal. And that's the fun part of it. But that's the stuff you try to create and make players accountable to be able to do that stuff.
Cage flow.
Cage flow is big because you don't want to get backed up. And I rushed Schwarb the other day. He's like, slow down, man. Your flips are like 100 miles an hour. I'm not even ready yet. So I said, sorry, man. I saw a hat behind you, and I'm trying to get it over with so he can get in here and the next guy can come in. So the cage flow is big because from my perspective, you don't get to see it while you're hitting, but that your teammates, if you're taking a long time, are just going, here we go again, you know, and drop the hands, and they do this with their hands up in the air. So I start speeding up to get the next player out when I should be like really focusing on their swing.
All the little things that happen, we talk about this a lot, but all the little things that happen over the course of a day, whether it's in the cage, in the dugout, people don't get to see all these little things, mm-hmm. but they're real. There's so many little things that go into a day of baseball, and the cage is hilarious. Just if you were to sit in there for the 3 or 4 hours before a game that you guys are down there and see all the little things that happen, like one guy will take 200 swings. One guy takes 5 swings. It gets backed up where there's 2 or 3 guys waiting to hit. You got guys rolling out down there. Different video of the pitcher and like different guys' thoughts on how they're going to attack the pitcher that day. There's just so much that goes on in the cage, and Post hates the cage.
Yeah, it's where careers go to die, man. You know, both coaches and players are just maxing it out there when it needs to be done on the field. I just like Sledge gets his steps in. His steps have gone up tremendously this year from last year. You know, when somebody banged out a BP or is not playing, and then it's like, okay, who's going to be upset if they're not in group 2 that got moved up from group 3, or who's not in group 1? And it's just like, I don't even go by the BP shell anymore. I just sit on the side. The social distancing has helped me stay away from the batting practice. So I just sit against the net by the on-deck circle and watch.
I like that you don't make the groups.
Yeah. No. Sledge takes a lot off of my plate, man. Like, the iPads is a thing, running up there to get them out, to give them to you before the game, doing the groups. There's just too much ground the last few years at Wrigley. You're running all over the place. So, and then also times, if you ask guys in front of people, you know, hey, you're going to hit today, but deep down inside they don't want to, but they're among their peers, and they're like, look around and go, yeah, I'll hit, but they really don't want to. You know, I'd rather a player just be comfortable throughout the day than try to force his work. Nothing good ever comes out of that.
You know, never. Like what you said about the cage, you know, where it's like you hate the cage. I feel like, you know, you need to make that mood just so much lighter when you go into the cage. It's not a daunting place where you're trying to figure something out every single day. You know, if somebody's struggling, even if you're going hot, you know, like, hey, what do I have to fix today? You know,
Yeah. If you don't enjoy what you're doing, you're not going to get better at it, right? It's just like anything you do. Like, I don't like running, so I'm not going to get better at it. Just as an example, you know, so if you're not enjoying it and you don't really want to go to the cage and it's not in a good environment where at least guys are at least hanging out. So I learn from the players. Like, I'm not the specialist. The player is the specialist. The player is the genius. You know, I'm just helped to guide the direction where they need to go. And there's a time and a place for everything. Like, we're bust out. We watch the green and blue and red stick figures, right? And we're talking about the swing. We're talking about mechanics. There's a time and a place for everything. There's also a time and place where you want that player to get in and get out, because as soon as he hits one bad one, he starts going places you don't want him to go. So, you know, you tend to, you know, stay positive and get him out of there. And then, because he's got other things he's got to do throughout the day than just hit. You got to lift. You got to run. You got to study the pitcher. You got to do your defense. So at least the 15 minutes the guy's in the cage, whether he has a successful day or not, he at least has an enjoyable talk. But it's also for me, like, the team that we have, like, really relieve a lot of stress, and not baseball stress, but like being away from your family, the uncertainty of making the schedule every day during the COVID, who has it, who doesn't. So a lot of questions are like, Ian does a good job. All our players do a good job checking in on me, which helps me go about my day. Because you, as a hitting coach, you never know how anybody feels about you, because it's always negative. Whenever anybody comes to you, it's always bad. It's a bad swing. We got shut out. This guy shoved again. So it's never, you never know if you're doing a good job. No, you know, when somebody tells you, you're quick to bounce it off. You're like, oh, okay, whatever. All right. Where's the punchline?
You're saying Hap hasn't came up to you and thanked you for his hot start yet?
No. Is it a hot start? It's a great start. Hot start's like, Charlie Blackman's hitting like 480 or something like that, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's a hot start.
True. Basically, Hap, you're not doing that great.
Hap is a good start. It's a really good start to the season.
How do you go about hitting 500 this far into the season?
It's not that far.
What are you,
20 games in?
Who's hitting 500 for 20 games?
Didn't he? Hit 400.
He's got enough hits by now that he's good for the rest of the season. He can shut it down if he hit 300.
Yeah, he's good. You start ahead and subtracting the numbers in your room.
Oh, Post, who's the most unique hitter you've ever had?
The hitter I'm working with at that time.
That's a horseshit answer. What about the craziest cage routine?
Craziest cage? There's not... Was a guy, I mean, not a big leaguer, but a guy named Vasily Spanos in Jupiter, Florida. If you ask any of the Cub guys who played against him, he took like five swings a day with one ball, would hit it and go pick it up and get it back, and he hit like 300 for the Jupiter Hammerheads that year with about 10 homers. In the big leagues, I don't think there's...
That's amazing. That's amazing. I'm just doing that.
Vasily Spanos. Unique. I don't think there's any real unique things. I think you get concerned when you see a player just change his whole thing and he can't hit balls like in flips, but he thinks it's great. That's like the real challenging part about coaching. Like, how long do I wait to, you know, get on this guy? Because, you know, as a coach, if you talk to the player too soon, you lose him forever. It's such a long season. Sometimes as a coach, you got to lose a couple battles to win the war. So you got to make him comfortable to have uncomfortable conversations later. I don't know, man. There's so many. I mean, just in the big leagues with two teams and being a coordinator, it's like 600 professional players you were in a cage with. It's nuts.
What about a player that you learned the most from in your big league time?
I would have to say Adrian Beltre.
Was he good at baseball?
Yeah, he was pretty good. Played a long time.
I'm sure he had a few good starts.
Played her a lot. Actually, no. I think the first year in 16, he had a good start. He was like, I can't believe this is happening. Like, I never, but he's probably the only player I've never seen get flustered or panic in the cage. Like, he has bad days where he's pulling off and everything's on the pull sides and the ground. And then he'll just hit a couple of line drives and just, thanks, Anthony. And he gets out where, you know, like, as everybody else is usually like freaking out. Even some really good hitters that I've been around, they just kind of panic. What's wrong? Where I go, I can't do this. I usually do this. He's pretty much the only guy that could walk out like not worried and go in the game and compete his butt off.
You've told me some cool stories about him, and I think the one that stuck with me the most is he would come up to you some days and be like, I just have to hit four ground balls to second base.
Yeah, he would have to hit four ground balls to second base. There were times where I was like, hey, we don't need you to get the runner over. He's like, no, I'm getting the runner over. You know, you're such a team guy. And there was one time he came in, he's like, because he would always yell. but that's the way he talked. It wasn't, he was yelling at you. He'd be like, hitting coach. I'm like, yes, Adrian. Yes, Cap. And he's like, what's wrong with my swing? I said, I don't know. I don't have any hits in the big leagues. You got 3,000. What are you asking me for? And he's like, you're right. That's why you're a good coach. Why am I asking you? You know, but like, I like Riz's routine. That's something different I've never done with Riz, the slow flips. But I wish parents on the amateur side can see what you guys do behind the curtain, because it's the complete opposite of the training that's happening on the amateur side. You know, how everybody does high T, Riz puts it out his neck, whatever it may be. Guys are working usually from the top down. Now what I've noticed more, because of the elevated fastball, it's been the most it's ever thrown. So a lot of the guys I've noticed have worked down, up to down, in their routine, starting at the top of the zone. So,
do you think people would be surprised if they were able to watch cage routines or on field early work with a guy like Riz and see just the discipline and that every ball isn't smoked? Like there's nobody with a radar gun trying to see how hard the balls are being hit off the tee. Or I think people would be amazed at just some of the routines and like the effort level that exists in the work.
I think the effort level is the big one, because the cage or your routine in the beginning, you have to be able to be under control, because the game, the adrenaline and the speed of the game is going to make you swing faster. So when you gangster hack in flips all the time, you're definitely going to be underneath the ball in the game. I mean, the swing is just going to go too fast. But even they would definitely be surprised. Even somebody like KB, who hits the ball in the air a ton and hits some skyrocket homers, I mean, he's a high flip guy. You know, starting out, he wants them at his chest. So because he knows he's got to get a little bit more direct to the ball and get underneath it, you know, at post through contact. So, but they would definitely be surprised. I tell people that all the time when I speak in the winter at some camps or dinners, things that I see, how intentful. It's not what a guy does, it's how he does it. You know, because there's so many different routines. There's no, or else you're going to create a one trick pony lineup or organization. So it's not what the drill does. When you meet a major league player, you should be asking them like why and how they are doing it, not what drill they're doing. That's the most important thing, or else everybody would do the same drill. It's crazy.
What's the biggest difference between being a coordinator and being with the team for a full season?
Winning, you know, like you're establishing the winning culture in the organization, but you're not on a team. So you miss the dugout stuff. And as soon as you're in town for 4 days, you're off to the next city. So you're not really part of a team. So as soon as you join the team in the big leagues, it's all about the win, you know, and trying to create dugout camaraderie for 162 games, have the cage floor and everybody get along. But also, like as a coordinator, you go in, a guy gets a couple hits, you go out, you look great, but you didn't really do anything, you know. The season where the guy's like dying in the cage and on the field, and he just can't get any hits, you know. Oh, so his back elbow, and then somebody else is calling you. You know, his big toe looks out of place again. You better set that straight. I'm like, yeah, thanks, guys.
When I came into the organization in 15, you were the minor league hitting coordinator. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in, maybe instructs, or I don't know, that probably instructs that year or finishing up in South Bend, and being like, God damn it, help me. Like, I'm not good enough. Yeah. Like, my swing's not good enough yet. And you would just be like, no, you're good. Yeah. Just keep going. Yeah. And I, now looking back, I really appreciate that you're like, no, you're good enough. Just go work it out. Like, you're a long way away. You don't have to fuck around with everything right now. But at the time I was like, damn it, PK won't help me.
I always had a saying in the minor leagues, like,
no, I'm saying like what Ian said, that's like the worst thing to hear. They're like, no, you're good. Go ahead. Keep going. Keep going. You're like, no, I don't feel good. It's not right.
Yeah, but then it becomes into like desperation practice, right? You won't get better, domination practice, not desperation practice. Then you start tinkering, which is fine because you got to tinker at certain times, but like that's definitely wasn't the time. You know, I want to prepare, I want to study that. So this way when we present it, we have a clear cut idea of what we want to do and go in the cage. And then you could just, you know, feel yourself and feel your rhythm and feel your flow without me talking. Because, like, you know, you got to respect that time for the player to work it out by himself. So it does no good if I was, especially on the minor league side, you're there for them. I never wanted a player to rely on me, but let them know I'm going to be there with you and whatever you need, you know. Because then up here, you got to make decisions. You're in the batter's box by yourself. It's not like football where there's a 12 men are working together, or an NBA alley-oop, or a hockey team. Like, you're in there with your own thoughts. if you can't control your thoughts and what you're trying to do, it doesn't matter how good your swing is, right? So you got to be able to manage both. It's such a balance. So really teaching that stuff first and then getting after the swing. But you guys are drafted for a reason, you know, because you are good. And I would always say, let's see if he can figure out the league before we start throwing stuff at him, because anybody could look at the video at a Kinnon Tracks and go, this needs to fix. This does not happen in the big leagues. Like, you just don't know if he's going to make those adjustments on his own, which is what you want first. Then it's time to step in and do whatever you think it needs to be done for the player. Bodie one day said, he started talking. He was like, my swing is my swing is my swing is my swing, which made total sense to me. Like, why am I consistently trying to make these adjustments? This is my swing. Let me figure out how to refine it year after year and get it tighter and shorter, but really have a really good understanding of what pitches I could hit and do damage with, what pitches I don't till two strikes. And then I just surrender to two strikes and battle, grind, and persevere. So, and players are from all over the world. Like, so when I was in Texas, I think at one point we had 8 guys from 8 different countries on the field at one time, on our field and the team. So it's like, you know, you're coaching Choo Choo from Korea, and they have their own thoughts that he grew up with. You're just not going to change, you know, his whole history in 2 weeks. So if you believe in the 10,000 hour rule, which I do, if the kid's been doing it, by the time we get him, he's been doing it for 10,000. To be able to make this overhaul switch, it's going to take another 10. But then he's going to be 35. He's going to be out. So you have to work to refine the things that they don't do well. And I've also seen, like, you know, even coming as a coach, I think you're going to fix everybody. Like my first year in Jamestown, short season, you don't want to lose a player's strength ever. So it's such a balance of keeping your strength, because sometimes guys who can really pull the ball and are like, hey, we need you to go oppo more. And then he comes in next year and he can't pull anything. Or
That's what happened to me. And, you know, from 18 to 19 or from 18 was, you know, tried to be a different guy and handle a pitch I'd never handled before in my career. Lost the ability to hit the ones that I really hit well. And before you know it, you can't do anything.
It's so hard to hit with a clear mind. If there's any clutter or self-doubt on what you're working on, it's not going to work. Like, I'm like, just here's some things. Let's try a couple of things. I will never be offended. Like I always tell you guys, I'm never offended because we're all on the bus together. So I'll never be offended. I don't want somebody to be super coachable, because then they're just agreeing with you because they don't want to hurt your feelings, which is crazy because this is a coach and a player in a sport. So, you know, I don't want a player who's just yesing his head every time. I've told players in minor leagues, like, dude, you're too coachable, man. Like, I just made up something and you agree with me and it will never work.
I hate the term coachable. Yeah. Like, God, he's not coachable. He doesn't listen. I got that one in college. It's like, no. I know what I'm doing. I believe in what I'm doing. And so there's a difference between having confidence in yourself and believing in yourself and not being coachable.
Those are the best players, aren't they?
Those are the guys that make it. The guys that'll look a coach in the face. Now, this is not good for kids to listen to, sure. I guess. But the guys that are good players that are so confident in themselves that'll look a coach in the face and just nod and smile and say, I'm not doing that. There's no way.
Yeah, I never get offended by it because I'm not the one going out there.
It's your career.
It's your career.
Speaking of the bus, is the bus still around?
Bus. Post gave it to the pitchers. Where is it,
Bruce? I opened it up to the pitchers, so, you know, it would just go around to everybody. I don't even know where it is. Somebody's got it.
I the last time I saw it,
I thought it was only a hitter's thing.
Well, we opened it up. Post opened it up to the full team because we want everybody to get on the bus. Yeah. Everybody's got to be on the bus. You can't really trust pitchers, but I saw Rex Brothers had it, and they were passing around through the pitchers. We should probably check on. I was thinking about that yesterday. We should probably check on the bus.
I got it because I kept seeing it in the bullpen like 3 days in a row. And I say, hey guys, this isn't this like come up with your own thing. This is like a team thing. We opened it up for you guys because of the bus T-shirts that they all got. The whole team and anybody on that ground floor, whether you're a trainer or you're the nutritionist or you're the strength guys, like anybody on that ground floor knows what's going on down there every day of trying to work and do your thing. So, and then CY brought it to me, and I put it in KB's locker in Kansas City. And then I don't know what he did with it.
I hope the bus isn't still in Kansas City. Post got his first T-shirt. He's on a T-shirt now.
Yeah,
he feels really good about it.
I feel really good about it. It was almost like when Danny Descalzo gave me the Jordans on opening day. You almost start crying because you're just like you don't know. And then I saw the T-shirts. And Rizzo comes in. He's like, I want to personally give it to you. You know, I'm the best 4-seam flipper in the game, so I'm locked in. And he comes walking in. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's a nice shirt. Is that me? I didn't realize that must be happy hitting coach Post Grasshopper days.
Is it has you on it?
His face is on it.
Yeah, it's got me on. My wife started crying because when we were at home in the winter and I told her to go on Amazon and find the bus, and then she put the stickers on at the W bus, she got really emotional. She's like, wow, this thing that you've been talking about all winter is like, you know, starting. And now, you know, with the Joe Obvious and the Obvious t-shirts doing his thing with it, just putting it out there now. So it's pretty cool.
Shout out Obvious shirts. That bus, yeah, that was an idea from your brain from the winter. It wasn't like COVID ball, 60 no. game. That was way before.
You know, Ian, it's actually like a 10-year thing. You know, I always envisioned of writing a book called The Road or The Journey, like, because 20 years in the minor leagues playing and coaching and having these cartoon characters with all these different cities' flags, you know, been through every minor league in baseball, including one independent league. So that was always in the back of my mind. And then when I read The Energy Bus, I was like, whoa, like, that was about 10 years ago. It's like, just combine us. But you were waiting for the right group of guys for me once I, you know, it wasn't a coordinated thing. But knowing this group and how close they are and in the next couple of years, what may happen, I thought that would be something like, you know, everybody's like, just get on the bus. This is, you know, this is for you guys, you know.
I really enjoy in the dugout when there's a 3-2 count or a big moment and you just hear throughout the dugout, just random people going, bus.
Seuss is the big one. He yells it. I like the random bus texts. And especially like on our hitters thing, we'll mess around, put bus text on there. But I'll just get one from a player and it'll just be a bus. No words.
Dakota, do you want to address the Is That So t-shirt that's been under the jersey?
Oh, yeah, we did think about that the first series when it was – well, that was – I don't know how it's been going lately, but you said it was like the first game of the year he wore it, won, and then he didn't wear it the next day, you lost.
And then we said it on the – we put it on the podcast. He put it back on. We went on a tear. We've lost three in a row. Maybe I just put a Who Says No t-shirt on his on his chair a couple days ago. Maybe we're going to
have to. I meant to wear it, but I got flustered with the iPad and stuff, and I forgot to put it on. It's right here.
Maybe that needs to go under the under the jersey.
I touched it today, and then you know how baseball is. I touched it, and I was like, yeah, and I went back to. Is that so? Tough games. It wasn't like we got some games, tough game, extra inning game. Anything could have happened these 3 days. So it was.
You maybe picked the wrong outcome with the shirt, though. You might have went from the W to you went to the wrong shirt.
You know, I think it's actually better sometimes if you just absolutely get shellacked. If you just get your ass kicked, it's much easier to move on from. Then you lose like an extra inning or a one run game, and you're like.
Yeah, because you probably put every player, every scenario. If I just did this, the inning would have been different. If I would have did this, that inning would have been different for sure. Because it's small parts throughout the game that change the course of the game that nobody even understands.
Yeah, and then you go back home motherfucking yourself for something that nobody else is thinking about but you. That's the best part of baseball. The best part of baseball is you're the only guy thinking about that one thing, but you think everybody else is thinking exactly what you're thinking.
You and Post.
I know, it's crazy. You're like, oh my God, this guy hates.
Yeah, I knew I shouldn't have taken that one step that way, and everybody's thinking about that one step that I took. Nobody knows that you took a step. Nobody gives a fuck. Everybody's thinking about their own step that they took.
I know. Oh, boy. What a game.
That was hitting coach, Cubs hitting coach, Anthony Iposi. Post is the best out there. Just a wonderful, wonderful human. I can't wait to give him a bottle of Parse rum. I'm really excited.
I feel like he's really good. I mean, I obviously have no clue because I'm not a hitter. But I feel like he's great at keeping things light. And that's one of like the bigger things you have to do with hitters. Because like you guys talked about, I feel like it gets really frustrating getting in slumps. Like pitchers will get in slumps too. But typically by the time our slumps are over, we're down in the minors again. So... hitters wise, like you'll have Chris Bryant or Javi or you or anybody go like, I mean, everyone does it like 0-for-20 stretch. And it's like, how do I get this guy back to being how good he can be?
It's got to be hard to have like to be the hitting coordinator, pitching coach, whatever, or hitting coach when you have so many big names on your team and your expectations are so high.
You're dealing with so many personalities. And like he said, people from different backgrounds from all over the world. And you're dealing with what every is the hitting coach. You deal with what every person is going through in their life. It's not just what's happening at the field that day. It's not just the 1-for-20 because in the course of 162, every single player is going to go 1 for 20 at least once, if not five times. And it's like, what's going on at home? What's happening with your family, your friends? Like, what other stuff are you bringing to the field that day? Like, are you not playing? Are you worried about not playing? Or did you get benched and you don't know why? Like, all those little things come into play, and they come into the cage first. And I think that's why I think the hitting coach has the toughest job, because they're dealing with all of that. And I think the best hitting coaches don't talk mechanics. They talk about the thought process. They talk about, you know, staying confident, what it means to like believe in yourself. And that's why I love Post, because he's so good at that.
I think two things too, like you said, like each hitter's different too. Like one guy, like you said, what'd you say? You said you want to talk the thought process, not mechanics.
Yeah.
And then maybe like, I don't know, maybe Rizzo likes to talk mechanics. You know what I mean? Like you kind of have to know every guy and what works for that guy and what doesn't work.
That is 100% true. Everybody does. Everybody has something a little different. You have to know everybody's routine and what makes them go. It sounds like an absolute grind to get 35, 40 at bats a day.
I feel like it's also a super thankless job. Like if everyone's raking, it's like, oh, KB's hot. Oh, he's not like, oh, hobby. But if everyone's cold, it's like, what is Anthony Iaposi not doing to fix these guys' swings? Like he needs
to get out. Like, or like you're not getting the guy in from second as a team, or like there's not enough two at RBIs. Like, yeah, people are upset with the hitters, but it's like with the hitting coach, it's like, why is our team approach not good?
It's crazy. Like,
in the box.
You know, it's every coach really, but they're like, if your team's struggling, it's like, damn, he's struggling. He looks in the mirror. He's like, oh, shit, that's my job. He's like, I'm struggling.
Can we talk about the 7-inning
doubleheader? Oh, my Lord.
Yes, funny, and I'd love nothing more than to talk about the 7-inning doubleheaders with you.
How great are 7-inning doubleheaders?
I love them. I love, but you know me, just love the game. I didn't mind 2-9s even. I get in this season 2-9s doesn't make sense. And like position
2-9s is a lot of base.
I mean, position players, it's completely different than for pitchers, but 2-7s is fun.
It's going to make the game so interesting.
Yeah. Like you
have 2-7s flies.
Like if your starter, like Hendricks has very good chance of going all 7 in game 1 tomorrow. And then whoever throws in game 2 could only, like, you could use like a bullpen day for 7 innings. Like it's easy to go bullpen, start with like a long guy to go 3 and then just like mix and match from there. It makes
it a lot. You could
burning through a whole pen through 9.
Right. If you get in a jam in the 3rd inning, you bring your closer and get out of it, finish that inning. And maybe the next one, it's the 5th inning already. And you're like, oh, if we have the lead, you know, we bring in our second best pen guy and the game's over.
Yeah.
And from, I have this theory that the reason why, like when you look at softball averages, like they're so high is because when you play 6 innings or 7 innings, you're probably not getting 5 at-bats. You're probably getting 3 or 4. And so once you have a walk that day or you have one knock, like you've already had a great day. Playing 2-7s is awesome because you get those 3-4 at-bats. You go 1 for 3, you go 1 for 3 with a walk, or 2 for 3 with a walk. You've just had a wonderful day. You don't ever have to get the 5th one.
The other thing is, too, it's a pretty good chance everyone gets to play.
Everybody has to play. Keep Grats fresh.
Get everybody in there. Get them some ABs.
Let's do the screen times. Let the screen times ride. Dakota, have you finished your parse yet?
I finished my parse yet. Ian, I finished my parse like months ago. I finish it within a week every time you give me one.
Are you saying
every time you get one, huh?
Are you saying
multiple times you're saying?
I've gotten it from him twice.
Huh. I have some parse here at the apartment to give to our guests. Maybe we can put that in your package of things that you are sitting here waiting for you.
My screen time is 5 hours and 8 minutes. I used it to watch golf earlier because if I do too much on my Wi-Fi, it'll lag. I know, an excuse, but that's pretty much why.
Zach?
5:20.
Come on.
I'm at 2:16.
Honestly,
don't care. You played a game.
That's the thing. 2:16 is actually high because think you played a 2 o'clock game today, Eastern time. You were at the park at 4 hours before.
I got to the park at 10 today for the 1:20 start.
So yeah, you're there 3 hours before, 3 hours for the game, another hour after. So you're knocking out like 7 hours of the day. You couldn't even be on your phone. So really, I'm going to double it every time you tell me something. So you're somewhere in the 4 range.
Is that so? That is so. Just so everybody listening knows, the 3 Is That So winners will be contacted. I will reach out. I will contact them. The Who Says No shirts are already in the mail to the winners. Thanks for everybody that participated in that. Like, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Go get a bottle of Parse rum. This episode of The Compound is sponsored by Parse rum. They're the best sponsor out there. We're going to get Dakota another bottle. Dakota, tell people what they have to do.
you just said it. They have to like, subscribe, unsubscribe, and resubscribe. My favorite tweet ever we've gotten still so far is the guy that actually had a broken thumb, and he told us it's because he was like subscribing, unsubscribing, and resubscribing.
I want those thumbs broken.
And I want everyone's thumbs broken.
That's episode 25 of the Compound Podcast presented by Parse Rum. Definitely not 100% not coming to you live from the Compound.